Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my friend Seth Muse. Seth, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Man, thanks for having me. What's up, man? I'm loving that you're in New York again, seeing your New York travels. Yeah. It's really exciting. So, man, thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it. I look forward to hanging out with you here in the city. And we've hung out during my stint in Dallas. It was a short-lived, shorter than we anticipated, but definitely enjoyed the time of barbecue in Dallas. And I think you and I actually ate barbecue when we got together.
We actually did.
No, we ate fajitas.
Yeah.
That's even better. Even better.
Because there's only one place you can get that.
Yes, yes. Breaking tortillas is probably the most biblical thing.
It's beautiful. It's a biblical sense of community. It's beautiful. It's how God intended.
That is the truth. So those that don't know you, just a few things. You are the communications director at Hope Fellowship Church. Yep. You are also a blogger at SethMuse.com, and you are a podcaster at Seminary of Hard Knocks. Did I get that right?
That's it. That's me.
Okay. So let's talk first about your role at Hope Fellowship Church. What is that? How long have you been there? What do you do? What does that mean to be the communications director?
Yeah, I've been on quite a journey in the past 2 years, and it has landed me here at Hope Fellowship. I'm the communications director, so I have a team of 4 people that work for me. I really like to say I work with them, but I'm the final decision maker on communications. So we have a graphic design team. We handle email communication, marketing, social media, any kind of look and feel for the church. Our team handles. We do print. We have our own print shop, and with a plotter and a huge print machine and all kinds of stuff. And we print way too much. We kill a forest for our kids ministry just about once a week. And we're like, hey guys, we could do less. So let's think of what we do. So we do a lot of that kind of printing. We don't do a bulletin, but we do a lot of handouts and stuff. So a lot of different departments. So we basically are a centralized leadership team. We have 3 campuses and they have a campus leadership team, but communications is centralized only. So all the team meets here, and we serve the 2 Frisco campuses and our McKinney campus with any kind of print or social or any kind of need they would have in communication.
Cool.
So we train, we help, we teach, we also do a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, let's get practical. You said you have 4 people on your team. What are those specific roles of those 4 people?
Yeah, those roles are, I have a project manager, and she's kind of the brains of the operation. She makes sure we all have all of our communication requests that are filled out properly. We have the info we need, and then she assigns it all out to our team in Asana. Okay. And makes sure that we are working on the right things at the right time and getting things done in a timely manner. And she is efficient and details-oriented, and this thing would fall apart without her, to be honest. Yep. So she is the brains of the operation. I have two staff members that are both full-time, and she's full-time as well.
Yep.
But these 2 staff members are full-time and they are in the design area. So my lead designer handles logos, sermon graphics, weekend stuff, you know, announcement slides, things of that nature, basically the look and feel of our church and how it's communicated.
Yep.
And then our other designer is our layout designer. So she handles a lot of our print work and turning those deliverables like a logo or a certain graphic. She takes that graphic element, all those elements, turns it into a flyer or a mailer or a printout or some kind of tangible thing. Yep. And then the 4th member of our team is part-time, and she is over our print shop. Basically,
okay.
We have all the deliverables that we would have to have that are tangible. She gives life and legs to everything that we create.
So, this is fantastic in that people often say, how do we structure staffing of a communications area, whether you have 1 person or 20 people? And I think you have to almost have to talk through, how does that scale to 2 people, scale back? How does that scale beyond to 10 people? Do you outsource anything, or is everything done in-house?
We do. We outsource a lot of our t-shirt, you know, Hope, we call it Hope gear. You know, things that we put our names on, like mugs and, you know, jackets or whatever we make. We outsource a lot of our big signage.
Yep.
And if we need to put something that's bigger than one our plotter can create or whatever, we'll definitely outsource that. Anything that needs to go on a building, you usually outsource that. Sometimes if it's on the window and like just our service times, we will outsource that, have that. So we do outsource a lot. We have a relationship with several print shops and, companies that do that for us here in the area. And we're always looking for newer and faster ones. And, you know, we're always visiting stuff. So revisiting how we do it.
Okay. Well, and so let's dig down a little bit deeper too into social media. How does that team manage social media for the church?
Yeah. If you're paying attention, you notice we are missing two important spaces on that team, and that is social and web. Yep. So how in the heck is that happening? Is that another department? No, it's us. So my vision for the next couple of years is to hire someone to handle handle our website.
Okay.
And we have a residency program, and I believe next year I'm going to be getting a resident for social media. Okay. Right now I'm doing it.
Okay. And
that's kind of my boots on the ground role in our team that's the thing I'm handling personally.
Yep.
Website, I'm not super great with. So our website is getting an overhaul in the next year. Hopefully it'll, you know, I know it will be because I'll be directing it. It'll be something that I can manage.
Yeah.
And then I eventually hope to get a resident or a part-time staff member at least to handle that as well. But social media is my favorite thing. So I definitely plan ahead and work really hard on that. And so that's my role. Really what I serve is I'm the eyes. I'm like keeping and make sure we're going the right direction. You know, I've given everybody on my team a one sentence job description and an association with 1 Corinthians 12, where we're one body, many parts. And which part are you in the body of the communications team? Mm. So I'm the eyes, and I'm trying to see that we're going the right place and all that. So anyway, that's what we're missing. And that's where we really struggle. And when I came on staff, nobody on my team wanted to do social. They hated it.
Interesting.
They hate web, and they want to hard code everything. And I'm like, I don't understand that world. But when I said I'm taking over social, one of them got up and hugged me. I was like, all right, cool. We're finding our strengths. We're finding where we fit. You know, working as a team.
So what's unappealing about social media to that team? And I'm assuming that's not just for that team. I'm assuming that's a lot of people generally in the church space. What was unappealing about it?
It is. You know, it's funny the conversations I have with people about social that tend to be negative like that.
Yeah.
And with my team specifically, it was because it was so like frequent. They didn't want to keep that pace up and creating, because they're designers and they're thinking, man, I've got to design something beautiful and nice, and I can't do that in the time I have, and so I have to design garbage, and I hate putting it out, and I hate scheduling it, and no way was paying attention anyway. So all we were doing on social when I got here was we were announcing events. That's and my staff still kind of, like in the rest of the church, they still kind of see it that way.
Interesting.
And so we're working on redesigning not only how we do it, but we're working on like trying to educate our staff on what the purpose of social is, so that they stop asking me to promote events on social.
Sure.
And I'm like, we've got to stop using the word promote. You know, it's like, we got to stop using this terminology and change the ship a little bit. But I've only been here since July.
Yeah.
It's been like, and I don't know when this is going to drop, but it's October now. So what is that? 4 months, almost 3 months.
Something like that. Not long. Yeah.
So I'm like, I feel like I've been here forever already, because it's such a good fit. And I love it. Absolutely love it. I love the church and I love what I'm doing. But man, I'll tell you, I feel like there's a lot of things that I should have already done. And then I have to go, wait, no, you know, you've only been here three months. You know, it's okay. Pace yourself. You know,
it's a marathon.
Oh man. It's so, because I'm getting so excited about it. Like, oh my gosh, you know what we could do? We got to change this. I get in front of the people and I'm like, oh, you know what? Settle down.
Yep.
Take your time. Do it right.
Yep. Yes. You know, I had never thought about social media from a designer's perspective. And the reality is, if you create a social meme, it's irrelevant in 3 to 5 hours.
Yeah.
And so when you create a graphic, a bulletin, it's good for a whole weekend, which doesn't seem like long, but in comparison to a social media post, it's an eternity. And then, you know, so you brought up a good point though, of you have to communicate the purpose of social media. I feel like I have been having this argument for about 6 years, 7 years. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear how you communicate that. How do you define the purpose of social media from your perspective?
Yeah, I think social, when it started, had obviously a different purpose.
Yeah.
And a different function, at least.
Sure.
It'll take whatever purpose we give it. That's the truth. Yep. And so if you want to use it to promote things, you can use it to promote things, and that's all you do.
Yep.
But that may not be the best way to use it.
Yep.
And so how does it function properly, and how is the best way to use it in its function and in what its purpose is? So for me, I look at social as an opportunity for a couple of things. One, it generates interest in our church. It allows a window into our church to kind of see what it's really like in here.
Yep.
And it provides a space for an actual conversation to happen with people who have something to say, you know. And I think some of the, and even when I look at it at the weekend, I look at our weekend experience, like it's still like there's a stage that you come and sit and watch what happens on it.
Yep.
And you watch what happens on a screen. And I don't really know how to fix that. You know, I don't really know how to make that more, get people more involved in that, you know, because that's how church is. You know, that's what church is. It's you come and you hear a speaker and you participate in worship, but you watch videos. It's like there's a big part of it that's speculative.
Yep.
And where you're just a spectator. And so social is the opportunity I see to take that wall down and have that conversation. So, and to tell those stories that you don't have time to tell in an hour and 15 minutes on Sunday or Saturday, whenever you have it, you know. And it's like Brady Shear has this 167 hours a week to kind of redeem the 167 hours versus the hour. It's like with my creative pastor, who is my boss, he's really focused on the weekend and I'm focused on the other.
Yep.
You know, it's like, it's because social so naturally lends itself there. So I see social functioning that way, but where it falls in our strategy is it's a step in a process.
Yep.
It's not the end of the process. Like, I think when you're promoting, you treat social like it is the end of the process, where I'm going to put some info out and you're going to, and often we haven't even thought there, like, do we put a button with it? Is there a link, you know, like you click a link and it takes you somewhere, and social platforms don't like it when you do that. So they're not helping you. And so it's like, that is an action step, but is it the best action step? Maybe the best action step is watch this video.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe the best action step is see this story and read this story.
Yep.
You know, and so if you think of it as like a step towards what you're trying to do, and what we're trying to ultimately do is we're trying to get people to become interested in what's going on at our church and want to attend.
Yep.
And I'm really thinking too, is that even a good goal?
Yep.
Maybe I should be pushing them on social to attend an online Facebook Live experience that we put out every Sunday.
Yep.
You know, maybe that's a more likely next step. So we're constantly thinking about how this fits into the strategy. And I think we're going to have to change what we think about attendance, you know, what counts as attendance, you know, is coming to an online Facebook thing, is that attendance? Cause I'll be honest, I work Monday through Friday and sometimes I stay home and watch that. I feel like I went to church, you know, it's like I'm there, but I'm not physically there. I'm at home in my pajamas, hanging out with my kids. And, you know, we're actually watching our pastor teach with our dog, you know? And so, you know, it's like, I get a lot out of that still.
Yeah.
So I think when you think about social and as a part of the process, then I think it starts to make more sense when people ask you to promote stuff and you say, no,
yep.
I'm not going to promote it, but I will tell a story about it. What do you have?
Yep.
And that puts it back on the department too, to have to think, okay, well, how can I best get my message out about this event? It's not because, and I say this all the time, people don't lack information. They lack inspiration.
Yep.
And on social is like a huge tool to a great tool to provide inspiration for an event versus information for an event. I say like the website's your information piece. If you want them to know something, send them there. But if you want to inspire them to do something, that's how Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, I mean, that's how Snapchat works. I mean, that's where you use those channels for.
Yeah, that's so good. Boy, and I wrote down a quote from you, and I'm gonna retweet this later. I'm gonna tweet this later. Is people don't lack information, they lack inspiration. Did I say that right?
Yeah, that's it.
It's so good. I mean, it's so, and I think as you think through your social feed, what you can engage people with inspirationally in their newsfeed, and then honestly, people aren't going to share an informational post. They are going to share an inspirational post. They're less likely to like, you know? And so when you think about the algorithm and everything else, that is such a good word when it comes to social media. I've got a couple of practical questions that I don't know where to take this, but here, let's get practical because you're a multi-site church and there's a lot of churches wrestling with this. Does each campus have its own social channels, and how do you manage that from an oversight perspective?
Right now, no.
Okay.
We have one Facebook page, one Twitter account, one Instagram.
Okay.
Now, student ministry has its own Facebook page and its own Instagram.
Okay.
And we just started a campus. We're starting a remote campus for Southeastern University here.
Okay.
SCU at Hope.
Yeah.
And that's going to get their own Instagram and channels as well.
Okay.
So the problem I'm running into being a multi-site with the Facebook side of it is people checking in to a location that's not attached to our page at one of our campuses. And I don't quite honestly know how to go about it. Like, you could use the location feature on Facebook. I've been looking into this last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But what it does is it creates a page for that site. And I'm like, well, I don't want to manage three pages, four pages, really, if you count the mother page as a site.
Yep.
And so it does have this nice feature where, like, if you post on the, I'm going to call it the mothership page.
Yep.
On the mothership page, if you post something, it posts to all the other location pages.
Yep.
And if someone comments on one of those, if you've brought them into Business Manager, which you have to do individually, you can see those comments and still respond.
Yes.
But I don't want to split all that among three pages, because we're very hard vision, one church in three locations.
Yep.
And that's a big part of who we are. And so I know before I came on, my previous, my predecessor and my current boss worked really hard to get rid of all those pages, because we used to have separate pages.
Yep.
And so I'm like, okay, well, it looks like Facebook is saying, yeah, kind of have to. Otherwise, people are going to check into our McKinney campus, but it's going to come up as they checked into some CrossFit thing that's next door.
Yep.
You know, and CrossFit's getting like tons of these check-ins where people are going, which might actually be good. Like, love our church today, you know, and like CrossFit's probably seeing it going, wait a minute, what are they talking about? The church next door? Oh, I think they're checking into the church next door.
Yep.
So at least it's raising awareness for that. And maybe we'll reach some people that way. I don't know. But I would really rather get us where we have one page that we can have three locations that are attached to without creating extra pages.
Yep.
So if Facebook's listening to your stuff, man, that's my request. I think I feel like.
So but even when I think about Facebook's, how Facebook manages that, I don't know how they would create a better solution for the multi-site church. Now, you can think about, I mean, a multi-site church is in many ways functions like a franchise or you know, restaurant in many locations. And
that's what it's for.
And how they manage that. But, you know, my brother-in-law owns a Chick-fil-A, and so he has his own Chick-fil-A page for his store.
Yep.
And so I think that's probably where they want you to go. But I'm with you of that's more to manage. You know, is it worth it for those check-ins? It's complicated. There are many different approaches. I lean towards your approach of, let's get as simple as possible.
Yes.
And maybe you're going to need to expand. Maybe when you hit eight campuses or whatever it might be, then they're each going to need their own page, and there's a critical mass there justifying it. But then you're also going to need two people to support all those pages.
And that's so it.
It's not just the pages. It's how you effectively manage all of those.
Yes.
You could in 10 minutes create five Facebook pages.
Keep and connect them and be great. I mean, I love the location feature. It looks great. It's just, I don't have the bandwidth to manage that. I barely have the bandwidth right now with all the other tasks that meetings I'm in, et cetera, to manage the one that we have and the Instagram and the Twitter.
Yep.
And so it's the Twitter. Wow. That sounded really cool there. And manage the Facebook and the Twitters. So I like the idea of the locations, because franchising is really what it's for.
Yeah.
I got excited when I first saw it, because I thought, oh man, sweet.
Yeah.
That's exactly what a multi-site is.
Yep.
Maybe this will work, but
we're
still struggling through that. And, you know, we're a large church. We're still struggling with that. We don't have the people we need, you know, it's the same kind of thing.
It's tough. I mean, I think people assume, man, once I can get two or three people, four people on a communications staff is a large staff. Now, you and I both know churches with much larger staffs, but most of the time it's one person trying to keep up with social media, with the website, with the bulletin, with everything else, print shop.
Yeah.
There are so many moving parts to communication. My friends at Vander Blumen Search Group recently shared with it that that's the fastest growing position in the church. Yep. And typically it's the third hire behind a children, like even before a worship pastor. So church typically will hire a children's pastor, then a communications director, then a worship pastor when it comes to prioritizing staffing. It is such a critical role in the church, and it's continuing to grow so much of it just because of the digital age now that we're in, which is creating more load because there's more to keep up with and more to manage. So here's the question with social media and your church. I found is so much is critical on the senior pastor, the lead pastor, how much they own social media. I'm not asking you to get an awkward position with your pastor, but I'm curious how your pastor receives social media, how you kind of coach them, educate them, and integrate that them into the vision of the church in your social media strategy.
Yeah. And that's something we're talking through as well. Even this morning, the meeting I was in when I got your message reminder about today, you know, we're talking, somebody asked the question, hey, who's going to start managing our pastor's social media? Yep. He does a pretty good job, better than he probably thinks.
Yeah.
But it's not regular. It's not consistent. And and that's the issue with social media is it has to be consistent to really have that impact. So we're thinking through that right now. I just finished a resource that it's out, 88 ideas for social media posts. It's a PDF. You can get it on my website. But then what I want to add to that is, you know, some ridiculous number of things that your pastor can post on social media every day.
Yep.
And so I'm working towards that on a resource to do that, because I think really the way to coach them is you've just got to give them something. You've got to give them a schedule. You've got to give them something to do. And if your pastor is open to social, he will love you for it.
Yep.
He will absolutely love that you've said, hey, if you want to, like we did this with our email newsletter that goes out every Thursday. We were talking about a rotation of theme that we could have for each one so that it doesn't become this, you know, announcement mill for everything going on, because that's the easy thing to do. And so he loved it. He's now talking about vision on the first week. He's talking about a value on the second week, you know, and he's got this kind of system. It's a schedule.
Yep.
So I think the best thing communicators can do is insert yourself into that conversation with the pastor, because you know your pastor and you're friends with your pastor. And if you're not, you need to be friends with your pastor and get to know how they tick and how they like to work.
Yep.
And then say, hey, have you thought about, you know, how you're posting on social? Because it gives you a platform when you speak live to it. When you start to say from a platform, here's what it's like today and here's how we can help you. If you aren't involved in social media, you kind of lose that platform, because that's how people interact in the world today. And if you're not part of that, it's like grandpa sitting on the porch talking about how they used to do it in my day, you know, and it's like, you don't connect and they know it when you're not active. So it is important. So it helps you stay in that sphere of influence with people, but it also allows you to see people outside of the church so that you can actually tailor messages and series more to what's happening in the culture.
Yep.
So that you can actually address the questions that they're asking instead of standing on the stage and creating your own question you think they're asking and then lose connection with your crowd.
Yep.
So not that they drive the spirit-led decision-making of what you talk about, but it does influence. I mean, you want to connect with your audience and lead them to something. And so you can find a way to do that a lot easier if you're on social kind of paying attention. Yep. So I think when you say that, they get why it's important.
Yep.
But then they don't know where to start. It's this big overwhelming thing. I don't even know what to say. And forget Facebook Live. God, I'll make mistakes and I get to practice my sermon three times before I get up there on Sunday. Facebook Live is no practice, you know, so that's terrifying. Yep. And so you just have to kind of walk with them, hold their hand a little bit, give them some easy to grasp things. And I'd say start really small.
Yep.
Just give them that schedule and post something each day or every other day.
Yep.
And then work your way up. And if you don't have a plan to help him grow, he's going to find that one thing he does and keep doing it.
Yep.
And that's all.
Yep.
And so I think our role as a communication director, if you're in the position on staff, like I am like three levels down from my pastor, but I talk to him about social.
Yep.
And I'm probably going to be the guy that helps manage his social.
Yep.
And it's like, oh gosh, I don't really have time to do the one I'm responsible for, much less my own, you know? So like I'm going to take this on too, but you know, we got to find a way to do it. You know, we got to be people that are creative, and I think we're going to have to rely on a lot of volunteers and build that team. And honestly, if I'm going to take his, I'm going to have to hand hope stuff off to some volunteers.
Yeah, I love that. You know, a couple of things I've found. One, I found that people connect to people better than they connect to organizations.
Absolutely.
So when the pastor can have a social media presence, people can feel connected to the person. Even if the pastor isn't the one managing it, it's still content, you know, core that's connected to them. The other thing I found just with some of the pastors I work with is when I can send them analytics reports and stories and just giving them a few comments of how people responded to, you know, a Facebook Live or a quote or something. Of here's the impact of these efforts that require much less time than anything else you do. And you're staying 10 in a whole. Yeah, that's a great point.
A lot of times
I would say, I did a $5 boost that helped us reach 3,000 more people. Is there anything else we can do to reach 3,000 more people with $5? Because I don't know of anything.
Because you know, the answer is no. or he hasn't thought of it at least.
So the ROI is so high. Of social media at this point, but the reality is the ROI even 4 years ago is much higher than it is today. And so because more and more people are jumping into it, I think the other, and I hate to say that I create a fear factor, but I guess it's what I do, is when I show these diminishing returns that people are finding on social media, it's not that social media is going away, it's that everybody else is catching on to social media and it's becoming a more crowded space, which in many ways is a good thing, but it creates more challenges for communications folks to with it. Well, I want to ask you a couple of things about, you know, you and I were talking about Instagram a little bit before this. My church, Hillsong New York, and I'm not involved at all in their strategy, all in on Instagram. And it's led by my pastor, Carl Lentz, and he's just a real dude on Instagram, but the whole church is all in on Instagram. You love Instagram. I'd love to hear why and what it is about Instagram that you love.
Well, especially right now, Instagram is the biggest reach for the biggest bang for your buck, basically.
Okay.
You can get more organic reach with an Instagram story that's been tagged with a location than you can with any other platform without paying for it. And honestly, when churches are trying to reach into their community, tagging places in the community is like sending a notification to that place and saying, hey, look at me. And they almost have to, you know, because it goes straight and like, oh, I got a DM. I clicked the red DM and here I am. Oh, this story, what is this? Oh, this church tagged me. It's like, that is what will 100% happen.
Yes.
Unless that place is getting a million DMs, which nobody is.
Yep.
That's why Gary Vee is all about like, it's going down in the DM, because it totally is.
Yep.
And that's where you can reach him. He will respond and he's big. And so when churches are active in that sense, using that side of Instagram, you can reach people that you could not previously reach and cannot reach on other platforms. The other thing I like about Instagram is that it's so versatile. You have the stories, you have the live, you have the wall, you have an album post now to put multiple things so you're not spamming a wall. You put it in one album that goes sideways. I mean, it's kind of like, what are they going to think of next? It feels like that's the app to end all apps, you know? And it's obviously they steal from Snapchat, but, you know, if Snapchat had something to come back with, bring it. You know, it's like, it's good, healthy competition. It's old WCW versus WWF, right? It's like, that's good competition, right?
Yep.
So, you know, Instagram is winning the game, I think, and mainly because a lot of people are getting on the platform, but they're not using all the features.
Yep.
And right now is a good time to jump on as a church. Mm. And what better app to show behind the scenes what's going, a window into your church, than Instagram?
Yep.
Now, the live portion of Instagram has been very disappointing to me.
Yes. Yep.
They did release the feature where you can post it and it can be available 24 hours. I love that.
Yep.
But man, every time I go live, it is nothing. There is nobody there. Now, the rest of Instagram is awesome. I hope they figure out how to make that work. So if I go live, it's Facebook, but everything else, I use Instagram.
Interesting. So the challenge that I hear a lot about Instagram is, how do you grow a following on Instagram where Facebook, you can do page like ads. I mean, initially you could really organically grow on Facebook. Instagram, it's as if they like keep you from growing. And how do you, How do you, so like even for my personal, I feel like I grew a lot, you know, the first 2 years.
Yeah.
And now, but I can't even pay to grow. Like, how do you grow an Instagram following?
Well, for me, what I'm doing, I'm kind of cheating.
Okay.
And I'm using my other platforms to point to it.
Yeah.
And say, go follow us here.
Yeah.
Where I have a little bit more reach, I'm saying, go to this place where you can have more engagement. And Facebook and Instagram being tied together allows me to both run ads to just Instagram,
yep,
which I think are great because those things look exactly like a post.
Yeah. Yep.
And people click them without realizing, oh, I just clicked an ad. I clicked four yesterday. I liked them and I went, oh, that was an ad. That happened on the reg for most people in Instagram. Yep. So you're getting great exposure when you use ads in Instagram if you do them right. If it's, if you're using the correct imagery, you know, on the web.
Yep.
So video is really good on Instagram. You know, there's just a lot of stuff there that can be powerful. But honestly, to grow a following there,
yep,
it's continually remembering that content is king.
Yep.
If you have content worth watching, people will come and see it. They will come find you. It will be featured in stories for your, if you do good stories, it'll be featured in your city story, which I haven't heard, but I think they stopped promoting business Instagrams in the story for the city, but your personal can make it.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think because I have had like three stories for my personal Instagram.
Yep.
If it's public, it has to be public.
Yep. Yep.
But my public personal Instagram has been featured in a city story and a state story several times. And I can't get my church one in there for the life of me. and I post like crazy in there. So I think there's been an algorithm change there to kind of boost the personal, because that's what people really want to see, and not the brands, which are the business pages.
Yeah.
So they're constantly trying to find ways to get you, but that's where you got to get creative and find ways around it.
Yep.
And someone will figure that one out pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. I mean, and I think it probably leans right back into your point of inspiration being so important. Is content is king. I talked to the folks at the Bible Project last week. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with the Bible Project, their YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I asked them, what's your strategy to grow? I mean, they've grown so much on YouTube. And they're like, we create content for one platform, and that's YouTube, you know, and think Instagram in our conversation here. And we create great content. We have not run one ad. It is just about creating great content, and great content wins. And that's our strategy, is great content that people want to share. And I think that's a great strategy as you speak to Instagram.
Yeah, I love that. That's my strategy for my personal stuff with Seminary of Hard Knocks. I've run, I think, one ad in 2 years. For my blog, I think I've run one ad in 2 years, and it's growing. And it's like organic. And if I can keep putting out content that people want to read and engage with, then it will grow.
Yeah.
And I'm a patient guy, so I can wait, you know. But for our church, I'm looking at things like things you just said. You talked about this group, Bible Project, uses one platform.
Yep.
And I'm looking at our church right now, and our Twitter is garbage.
Mm.
We don't know how to use Twitter in the church really anyway, or I don't.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a good church Twitter.
Yep.
We have it. So I'm honestly ready to just go forget it.
Yeah.
Let's just have it there, and I'll just post to Twitter or whatever comes from Facebook if it looks okay.
Yeah.
I don't even care. It's like we're not getting any engagement there. We can't figure out how to work. We've tried live tweeting. We've tried hashtags. We've tried all kinds of tricks, you know, whatever, and just get no traction on Twitter. We've grown 30 people, I think, in the last 4 months.
Yeah.
Whereas on Facebook, and we've grown, we've just hit 8,000.
Okay.
Likes on our Facebook page, but that was up like 500 likes.
Yep.
You know, in 3-4 months, and then Instagram's grown almost 200 like follows on our Instagram in the past 2 months, and we haven't really paid for any ads.
Yep.
So it's a matter of just good content going out, and so I can see some fruit happening there of my effort. So I'm gonna go there.
Totally. Totally. I love that. And we're going long here, but I'm going to keep going long because I've got a lot of questions I want to ask you still.
Okay.
And I think everybody wants
to talk.
And I want to talk about your personal stuff. Before we do that, one last strategic point that I want to dig into a little bit is, you've talked a lot about copywriting, how important copywriting is. I didn't even, now I'm in an agency world now. So copywriting, half of our work is copywriting.
Yes.
So I value it in a different way than I used to. But in the past, I was the copywriter and I didn't even realize that I was the copywriter.
Yeah.
I just wrote things. Explain to me why is copywriting important and why should the church be paying attention to copywriting from a communications and marketing perspective?
Sure. I think you hit it on the head. That's how most people in church world view it. It's like, I'm the copywriter without realizing it.
Yep.
Because it's not considered a thing
right.
that we should care about.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you can have a great video and a wonderful picture or a graphic or a cool event happening that you're promoting, but people don't make action decisions based on that.
Mm.
The copy is what gets people to do something. It gives context to your graphic. It gives context to your video, to your event, and it tells people what to do next. Now you can use, you know, when it comes to copywriting for like websites, obviously if you're writing a message that's actually on a button, and yes, that's still considered copywriting,
yep.
then it's pretty clear that it's a button, you want me to click it.
Yep.
So don't put click it, click here.
Yes.
You know, copywriting, where you get good at copywriting is when you go, I'm not going to put click here. I'm going to put start winning now.
Yep.
Because you already know to click the button, right? It's like taking it another step to calling them to an action. And copywriting will take a concept and kind of funnel it down to this point where you have one clear thing that I want you to do. You've read this. I've given you my spiel. Here's what you do next. And that's all that's on that page. That's why you see the big headline and maybe the subtext and then a button that tends to over a big giant picture. And that's like websites today, you know? Yep. So there's a reason that all of that is considered copywriting because it gives the message some handles to grab a hold of for people that visit your site.
Yep. I love that. I love that. It's, you know, and I'm getting so many quotes out of this, but the copy is what gets people to do something. Is that's a perfect line. And this should be intentional in your bulletin. This should be intentional in the copy that you put on your screens before services. This should be intentional in your social media post. What do you want somebody to do when they read whatever it is that you're creating? And I think the reason that I didn't see myself as a copywriter is everyone can write. And so I think, but I can't design. Like, I don't know how to use Photoshop, so I'm not a designer. Copywriting is a creative art and it takes intentionality. Now, I think all of us should look to grow in that skill. And it is an undervalued skill in the church, but there is an intentionality that just not anybody can do. It's an art. So I appreciate you really speaking to that.
There is. And I mean, I owe a lot to Donald Miller and his story brand.
Yep.
Check that out. And copyhackers.com, copybloggers.com, find a podcast that talks about it. Amy Porterfield's really good at it.
Yep.
There's a whole bunch of places you can go and learn how to write better.
Yep.
Because honestly, here's the process that typically happens. All right, guys, we got this event. It's coming up. We need to make a flyer. We can do a video. What's the flyer say? Oh, you know what? Just make it. We'll figure it out later. No. Start with what it needs to say.
Yep.
Because what I often get is when I get a write-up for a mailer, that's typically how our church kind of works too, in the old way of thinking. And what I'm trying to change. And so they say, we want a mailer, and then we make a mailer, then we get the copy and the copy doesn't fit.
Yep.
You know, it's like too many words because they didn't think about what was going to be on this mailer. And so helping them understand, like, you've got to be able to say a lot with very little.
Yep.
In this day and age, especially if it's a mailer, if it's a email, if it's a social media post, all those things you mentioned, you've got to be able to say it succinctly and powerfully. That takes practice.
Yep.
That's not something you just do later and figure it out later.
Yep.
That's hard.
Yep.
And somebody has to be thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. So let's talk about your writing. So you have a blog, you've been blogging for some time. You also have launched a podcast. How did you get into what I would describe as building a personal brand? Where did that come from?
Yeah. Honestly, it comes out of my need to teach. And when I learn, one of the ways I actually learn is in processing is telling someone else about it.
Yeah.
I'm a very verbal processor. People will often find me talking to myself and go, well, Seth's finally lost it. No, I'm actually working on an idea. You know, I have to do that. And if you can see me right now, I'm swinging my hands around because that's just how I am. So I have to process the idea out loud. And one of the things I started doing is, like, I'm going to blog about what I'm learning. And because I came to communications with some basic experience in youth ministry.
Yep.
I was a youth pastor for 17 years. I had jumped out of that and made a hard cut and gone into marketing for a company, for a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And turns out there's only one message I really care about, and that is the gospel. So I wanted to come back into the church to market that message. And so through all that, while sitting at the company, I was still volunteering in a church, finding a new church, all that. And I started to blog about it. And I was like, I'm just going to create this site. I don't really know what to do. So my wife, who's a web developer, helped me set it up.
Okay.
And I just started writing. Yeah. And then I had a friend of mine who was an ex-youth pastor say, you know, you used to talk for a living. Maybe you should start a podcast. When I did that, it was way easier to get my ideas out. And I thought, that's a good idea.
Yep.
So I came up with a stupid name for a podcast and went with it. And it took, you know, people started listening, and I started promoting two things. And through that whole process, it's just been about figuring out, you know, niching down to what is my thing.
Yep.
And what am I about, and what does my look need to be?
Yep.
And I think I'm almost there on all of that. I'm really happy with where I am now.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of branded myself as a communications person. You know, I'm a lovable troll. I'll jack with you. You come to my website and there's buttons that say don't click that actually turn red when you hover them.
That's funny.
And, you know, so when you click it, there's a surprise, but there's also a lot of intentional, like, leading you to my resources and leading you to my blog, where, you know, it's like my whole website is actually trolling you. And even in the first message, there's a little, the message itself kind of trolls you. You have to look at it real careful to catch it. So, you know, I like to have fun. And so I incorporated all that into the brand. This is Seth Muse. The Seminary of Hard Knocks is kind of a funny name, you know? Yep. So it's just, I like to say it's infotainment, and you know, that's where it kind of but honestly, it comes from a love of sharing ideas about how we communicate better, and especially in the church with, you know, when so much is at stake.
Yeah. I love that. I got into it much differently. I read a book by Michael Hyatt, and he said you should do it. So I did it. And I had no reason, but what I learned is, it was my way of verbal processing what I was learning. So I learned out loud, and it helped me to kind of refine my thoughts of what I'm doing, you know? And as I tried to communicate it to others, I would almost process sometimes, wait, I should be doing this, or, you know, and it would all, in many ways, hold me accountable too. But one of the tension points that I faced, and I'm curious how you navigate this, is how do you do this in the church space? One where your church doesn't feel like you're just doing this to build your personal brand. Because I think there's a lot of people that listen to this that try to do this. And so there's a tension there. And then the other is, how do you do this without being egotistical, maybe, or I don't know the right word, but where it's about you. Does that make sense? Like, we're about Jesus, you know, and I'm with you too. Of like, I've done secular marketing, and like, my heart is in ministry and it's in the church. And so that's where, you know, like, and even as I coach, I want to do it around Jesus, yet your name has to be attached to it. And so how do you balance that tension?
Well, I think we have a false humility there that we have to fight. I think there's this idea in Christianity that we're not supposed to have anything, that we're supposed to be poor, wretched, pitiful, and that we can't promote ourselves at all. But honestly, I mean, Jesus talked to people on mountaintops, you know, it's like, it wasn't just that he was, you know, popular at the time. It's like, there's people talking about him. He's got a message that he's relaying, and it's resonating with people.
Yeah.
And so when that happens, I don't think he had a marketing machine.
Yeah.
I don't think he had PR. I think he was just out there, and he was a person that was so divisive with his message anyway. Yeah. And I hate to say that about Jesus, because he's like the unity guy, but his message divided.
Yeah.
He even said, it's like, I've come to separate father from husband from wife. And, you know, I'm bringing the sword, you know, he's like, my message cuts to the bone. And so I think when we're like that, it happens. But what I'm talking about with my personal brand, I see what I do, and I'm going to say out there away from the church, you know, in my personal space, what I do out there makes me better in here. Mm-hmm. And what I do in here helps me teach it better out there. So I don't see these two things as, you know, separate things. It's part of the same symbiotic circle. Yep. Like, I need to run with people in a Facebook group and share ideas. I need to get up in front and talk about something and have someone go, that's good, but what about this? You know, I need to be in that space. I need to rub shoulders with people like you because you help me be better. Sure. And then I come here to my church job, which I do 8:30 to 4:30 every day. And let's be honest, most of the nights and weekends as well, because social never sleeps.
Yes.
And so I'm here doing that, but I'm using what I'm learning because I'm out there.
Yep.
And so for me, it makes me better at this job. I become more valuable to Hope Fellowship because I go on podcasts and talk to other people about ideas than I would be if I wasn't doing that, or if I wasn't part of a Facebook group, or if I wasn't trying to blog, or if I wasn't trying to process ideas out in public. Because let's be honest, theology is supposed to be that way.
Yep.
Theology is supposed to be public, you know, worked out in public, in a community.
Yep.
You know, it's like, it's better when it's that way. Yep. And when you have like this isolated theology where you're just reading the Bible by yourself all day and that's all you ever know, you can develop some messed up stuff.
Yep.
And same's true in communication. You could start really just undercutting the message of the gospel in your church because you're isolated. And to me, I never want to get to the point where I don't have people I can go to and ask that I think would know.
Yep.
And so being out in that space helps me with that and keeps perspective and keeps it fresh. And I love that your guys like you going, hey, let's talk about messenger bots. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never thought about a stupid bot. You know, like, do I need to care about bots now? I guess I do, but I know about it. Yep. And now I can think about, okay, well, how does that fit into our strategy? You know, and I hear somebody talk about it and educate it. So it's valuable to me having that personal brand. Just, I love to teach, so I want to push it that far, but some people just need to be part of the group.
Yep.
And that's, I say that's kind of the minimum. For doing what we do in this space better.
Yeah, that's good. Well, anything as we wrap up this podcast you'd want to share with church leaders around social media and communications?
Most of us are doing double duty. And honestly, I just want to say, hang in there, keep doing what you're doing, keep finding ways to delegate stuff. And if you're a pastor that's, you know, give some space, let those that really know how to run with this run and trust them. And if you're a person that doesn't know how to do things, don't bite off more than you can chew and just start doing what you can do. Take that first little step and then take the next one.
Yep.
You know, and just continue putting one foot in front of the other and move forward. And one day you could be a Neil Smith.
Well, I appreciate that point. It is, don't start with messenger bots.
Don't start with messenger bots.
That's the first step. That is step 217 in the process down this path. Well, Seth, how can people connect with you online?
Well, find me at sethmuse.com. You can also, I'd love it if you listen to my podcast, The Seminary of Hard Knocks. Right now, like I said, I have a resource that's free. Join my email list, and I'll give you 88 original ideas for church social media posts in a PDF. And it really is 88 different ideas. It's not the same thing over and over. And you can use them for different platforms and stuff, because people always say, like, what do I post? Well, I got 88 ideas for you. Yeah. And a lot of them regenerate new ideas too. So I love it. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done. And I'll just tell you, if you join my email list, it's fun. I'm not trying to sell you stuff. So just get on and I have a good time with it. It's fun. So email marketing is one of my favorite things to do because it's predominantly writing. It's fun. So find me at sethmuse.com.
Very good. We'll have a link to those things in the show notes. So go to socialmedia.church and link over. Go get trolled on Seth's website.
Yeah.
Go get this free resource and then get on that email list and get great insights from Seth without being sold a bunch of stuff. Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.